Remember the song Heart and Soul? That tune made you feel good, and feeling good is what everyone wants. Join us for our favorite KNRY program, Heart and Soul, with Dr. Bill Little and Dr. Gary Richmond on Friday afternoons at 3:05. This live one-hour call-in radio show is about bringing to consciousness spirituality, laws of attraction, and psychology. Heart and Soul, an empowering radio talk show, Fridays at 3:05.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Bill Little and Dr. Gary Richmond with Heart and Soul.
And hello and welcome to another day at on the Cannery and a Friday at the KNRY. Dr. Bill Little is a little under the weather today, so he won't be joining me. I'm Dr. Gary Richmond. I will and am here as it's a live show. A lot of what we do on KNRY is talk about various ways to walk your talk with integrity, to walk it on your path, and to be in harmony and truth with self. We do that from many perspectives. We do it from a transpersonal psychological perspective, from a quantum level, from a philosophical approach, Eastern philosophy and Indian philosophy specifically. And also we talk about things from a religious science perspective. And I sometimes use we because I think of Bill as being right here with me. And this is also a call-in show. So as I'm here alone, as I was last week, I would love people to call in for a couple of reasons. One, your questions give me ways to pursue more in-depth meanings and also take the show to a level that you need and you want. And trust me, if you're asking a question, someone else also is experiencing the same aspect of a question or various aspects of that question. And the answer can be helpful to many people, not just yourself. The number here at KNRY is 831-373-1234. That's 373-1234. Each week, I choose a topic, and today's topic is anxiety. And it's kind of anxiety/fear. And the reason I'm talking about it that way, or we'll talk about it that way, is because, and let's kind of define the terms, as a professor of mine used to say, fear is sitting in a room with a lion in front of you, frightened to death that that lion's going to attack and eat you. Anxiety is sitting in a room alone, fearing a lion is going to attack you and kill you. So a lot of what's going on these days has to do with anxiety. There was Kaiser was a man who of the Freudian era who wrote a book that talked about the underlying approach and underlying issues of psychology for all humans is the issue of abandonment. And the anxiety of abandonment is usually what people experience. And we interchange anxiety and fear all the time. It was Roosevelt who said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." And that's really true. When we think of how many times we really have something in front of us that is God-awful, that is in reality, as in the terminal illness or being in the moment of a car accident, or in many ways those people who have, in the terms of the economic realities of today, who have are in the midst of losing their homes. That's a very fearful place. None of us want to be there. It's a bottom-line survival orientation. It's one that is very staggering and paralyzing in its own way. And very few times are we sitting in that kind of situation. Most of the time, what we are experiencing is anxiety. Anxiety is a sense of fear or a sense of something coming at us or a sense of being in harm's way or a sense of being in jeopardy or threatened or insecure in a sense of our stability or position. And so most of us suffer from anxiety. And often you see that in terms of many different psychological issues. But most of the people walking around are dealing with aspects of anxiety. And I wanted to talk about that today because so many people do experience that. They experience a sense of something being wrong, something threatening, something uncomfortable, something insecure that causes them to react to the world as if it's real, not something they've made up. As you've gone on a few years of living in the world, you realize and start to get a sense that most of the things you have anxiety about and think about in terms that you're frightened of almost never happen. Most of the things that we're anxious about don't happen because anxieties come from our own inner sense of concern and instability, our own inner sense of not being able to handle something. And it's our sense that we don't have a clear hold on an anchor or a stability or a security or a sense of being okay that causes us to get anxious. And again, as I said, anxiety causes us to move in many different ways that cause acting out behaviors. Some of the obvious ones are addictions, such as alcohol, such as food, such as drugs, such as sex. People act out of anxiety to anesthetize, medicate, or distract the anxiety that they're dealing with. And if most of us could get a handle on our anxiety, as Bill is a religious science minister, one of the things he would say, and I say as a transpersonal psychologist, is that the more we can get a handle on our anxieties, the more we can get a sense of what they are, the more we can look at where the patterns of our anxiety spring from, the more we get a sense of what's going on for us and the lessons we need to learn. And often in the latter part of the show, I talk about the ways in which to do those things. Right now, I just want to define terms and get a sense of empowering you with an understanding that most of the anxieties you experience aren't real. Now, that's going to be tough to really sit with. Most of us want to get up off our chairs and scream, no, my anxieties are real. I feel them all the time. They're overpowering. They cause me to sweat. They cause my hands to get cold. They cause my heart to palpitate. They cause me to walk around looking over my shoulder. They cause me not to trust people. They cause me not to interact with people. They cause me to distract or step back or withdraw or isolate and not be around people. You don't understand. Those are really real. Well, I get that they absolutely feel real. And that's the interesting point. They feel real. And therefore, as the feeling sense of things, we get a sense that it's truly happening. And as we feel them, then we believe that the world is manifesting something that is stimulus response. But the stimulus response is really something internal. It is something that goes on in terms of what might be more called emotional post-traumatic stress. Now, post-traumatic stress is something you hear about in the tabloids or the newspaper, and there really are those kind of things. For instance, a Vietnam or a Mideast war veteran who's been shot or wounded or traumatized in a war situation could be walking in the forest in any of the forests of the United States in a very calm and peaceful and quiet way, and all of a sudden start to have what's called a panic attack. And the panic attack is that you start to feel nervous, your heart palpitates, you start to sweat, you get clammy, and you get frightened. And you have a sense of fear and dread. That fear and dread, as I said, is anxiety, because as you look around the forest, there are no snipers there. There's no one in the treetops ready to shoot you, but your body is reacting as if it is exactly that, as if it is exactly what's going on. Now, this type of post-traumatic stress is the severe type. Rape victims also experience that. When a woman's been raped and then survives that situation, and even sometimes with counseling, depending on the extent of the counseling, we'll be walking in a dark parking lot in a very safe area where most people would not be particularly concerned or perturbed about the situation. And yet, or even on a lit street, but no one's there, for instance, maybe it's very late at night and someone's walking near the car, all of a sudden they too can have that post-traumatic stress panic attack where they start to, again, the clamminess, the heart palpitation and so forth, because their body is having a sense memory of something that it experienced that is causing it a heightened sense of alert in a fight-flight situation, and there is an immense sense of fear. And the fear seems as real as the old saying goes, the nose on your face. But in reality, none of that is happening. There are no people coming at you. There are no guns pointed at you. There's no one stalking you. What happens is your body is having anxiety. It is reacting as if there's a lion in the room. And yet there isn't, because the body is holding a sense memory that it has not gotten over, it is not truly healed, and not truly put to rest. And so it is vigilant, which is kind of this side of paranoia, to watch out and still be concerned. And there are what are called triggers that cause that anxiety to pop up. Now, emotionally, we all have those kind of post-traumatic stress emotional anxieties, and they're called more less severe kinds of things. And those less severe kind of things are called things you're very familiar with: anxiety about a sense of being insecure, a sense people don't like you, a sense that you can't be cherished, a sense that you aren't worthwhile, an insecurity sense of that no one's going to want to talk to you, an insecure sense that no one finds you creditable, an insecure sense that someone is going to yell at you, an insecure sense that someone's going to punish you. These are all very familiar types of things that we all live with. Not all of them, but various ones in terms of where we grew up and the kinds of insecurities that were directed toward us and we took on at an unconscious level in a way that we're not able to control them. And unconscious is the same way as a post-traumatic stress with a war victim. The conscious sense is he looks as a person, male or female, would look around. Nothing in the environment speaks to being in distress or in danger. But the unconscious is triggering something that isn't real and has a sense memory that you're in danger and clicks off the body mechanisms that set off a complete emergency system that shows up again in a panic attack and heart palpitations and so forth, causing us to feel fear and frightened. That's anxiety, because as you look around, it's a calm situation. This will even happen in my office as I'm working with patients, and we're starting to walk through some of the shadowy places where trauma has occurred, physical or emotional, and there's almost a sense of being frightened and wanting to run out of the room. And I tell people, look around the room. There's nothing here that hasn't been here before. This is your sense memory, body, and unconscious triggering off kind of an emergency situation as if something really exists. And we all have those kind of things. And so when those anxieties trigger, sometimes at first, obviously, we have to deal with them because our body is reacting as if there is danger. Again, you've got to get your breath. You've got to be able to calm your heart and your respiratory system down. You've got to be able to breathe so you get kind of past that clammy, sweaty, concerned, vigilant feeling. And as you start to do that, you go, what got triggered? What in me got triggered? Because I'm having a reaction. Now, if it's a reaction in the world, as I said, there are many things people do to attend to that. A very minimalistic aspect of that can be we all have issues of certain social phobias of going to parties and feeling like we really won't have something to say or people really won't want to talk to us and a little nervousness about being around a lot of people. And what do people do? Well, they have a drink or two. They anesthetize the anxiety that has a fearful sense of not being accepted or not being enough, and they de-inhibit themselves a little bit so that they can quote-unquote relax and feel a little safer by medicating the anxiety. And as you do that, things start to quiet down and mitigate to a point where you're able to function a little better. Now, this is a very normal thing. This is something people do all the time. But again, people do it. And you know that because you've been at parties. If you're over 21 or even 18, you've been to parties where people are drinking to allow themselves those first couple of drinks to kind of chill out, to kind of relax, to kind of offer that quieting aspect that will help them cope and function. Another way that people do that in a normal sense is through the stresses of the day. There are a lot of stresses that occur and cause us anxieties in terms of not real fears, but certain anxieties due to insecurities that have to do in the work world in terms of various business deals or interactions or negotiations that are going on. And when you get home, what do you want to do? Typically, people will medicate with food or alcohol to allow themselves to de-stress a little bit around some of the anxieties that are free-floating from an unconscious level. And the unconscious is just a nice psychobabble word. And what that truly means is that at a very early age, when you were growing up and taking on these insecurities as a child will, there's a core sense of how you feel about yourself and how you think the world relates to you. And as you take those in and grow up around that, it gets reinforced and set in at a non-conscious, almost visceral level, almost genetic level of your sense of self. And that's the knee-jerk reaction that often sets us off to have anxieties or make assumptions in the world that cause us to do things that we think are protecting us but are actually protecting us from anxieties, things that are not happening in the moment but that we fear in an anxious way will occur. And that's something that does happen and causes us to, again, react. So it's really important to be understanding the ways and patterns that that happens, because we all have our own insecurities. Obviously, some of them overlap. But again, you have your own insecurities and anxieties that stem from inappropriate training by human beings who were flawed and had their own issues and taught you those kind of things. And you bring them into the world as you bring yourself into the world from that your own childhood and your own upbringing and from a system you grew up in, learning these behaviors and learning the triggers that sometimes cause us to have these kinds of fears. And then as we grow up and have our own situations and life experiences, we have things that show up and cause us to have our own wounds and our own what I call psychological dents that we react to in the same way. For instance, a post-traumatic stress is you're in a relationship. The person you're with betrays you. You feel devastated and overwhelmed. What happens the next time you start to get into a relationship? You're a lot more vigilant, a lot more guarded, a lot more concerned, a lot more inquisitive about certain things, and cautious about how to proceed and continue so that those kind of things won't happen again. Now, part of that's experience and something we need to learn from our lives. But it is also an aspect of anxiety, because it's not real with the next relationship. It is, in essence, again, a post-traumatic stress reaction to the relationship you had before, that someone did betray you, and that was a great deal of pain and understandable concern and difficulty. And if you don't heal it, you bring it with you. And as I said, anxieties are the things we bring with us in that way. And as we bring them, it tells us what we haven't healed yet. What we haven't healed either from our childhood or what we haven't healed from various experiences from late adolescence into our adulthood. And they're patterned. And when they say post-traumatic stress, it means that you have repetitive patterns. So the good news is, in a difficult way, those things keep coming up. Until you heal them, they will keep coming up. And there's an old spiritual statement that says, if you don't learn your lessons, the universe will hit you with a bigger stick. And the deal is that the more you choose not to look at what's going on, the more hurt you're going to get in bigger ways, because you keep choosing badly from those unresolved anxieties and difficulties that you don't choose to want to deal with. And if you stay in the anxieties, guess what happens? As I said, you make assumptions about the world based on those anxieties and therefore live your life as if that's truth. You live your life as if the anxieties that you have, hence that make you feel fearful about things, you step up in your life in ways that continue to react as if your assumptions are true no matter what. Well, what does that do? Well, what it does is it sets up a self-fulfilling prophecy in which you, let's say, for instance, you meet someone and you really like this person and you appreciate them, whether it's a friend or a romantic relationship, but your anxieties are that you'll either be betrayed or you're too insecure to be loved or you're not worth cherishing or someone's not going to really like you or your inner child is so unacceptable that the closer that person gets, as more and more intimacy and closeness occur, you're sure this person's going to find that you are awful, that you are someone who is not acceptable. So what do? You start, as the intimacy keeps increasing, to push that person away, to push the person back or set up a fight or set up a difficulty or set up a test or set up some kind of obstacle that's not going to allow the person to get closer and in actuality will cause them anger because they don't understand what's going on. They don't understand when they thought things were going well and okay. All of a sudden, they're in this danger territory and they don't know how they got there, but they're clear they don't like it. And if you keep doing it, guess what? You win. The person goes away. You have now set someone who is someone you appreciate, someone you might like, someone you could have maybe been in love with, and you push them away. And the unconscious wins. And what does that mean? The unconscious sense and the anxiety of not being cherished has kept people away, so you don't have to worry that you're going to be abandoned, that you're going to be rejected. Now, consciously, you wanted the relationship. And what I tell the patients I work with is the unconscious need will override the conscious want. And in the scenario I just gave, the unconscious need of not letting people in because you don't feel you're a good enough person wins over the conscious want of wanting to be close to them and have a real and in-depth relationship. So in terms of the relationship, you start out really well, But as time goes on, and usually the honeymoon period in relationships is 3 to 6 months, so about 6 months to a year later, the fear, in essence, the anxiety that someone couldn't possibly truly love you starts to get higher and higher on the agitation scale, so much so that you set some kind of sabotage up that causes the person to go away. So this is an incredible example, and one that, you know, if you haven't done this, you know someone who has. And it doesn't have to be a romantic situation. It can be a friendship. It can be getting a job interview. It can be having the job and dealing with a supervisor. It could be wanting to supervise someone and you're not able to honor yourself, so you push them away. So these kind of things show up in a self-prophesizing aspect all the time from our anxieties that stem from our own insecurities. Now, one of the things that Dr. Bill has talked about when he's here, so I'll paraphrase a little, is that this happens even in quantum theory, that there's something called particle theory that, and Bill would explain it much better, but the gist is that particles move in the direction that the physicists believe they're going to move. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you believe something's going to occur, it does. Now, in the Bible, what it says is, as you believe it, so is it done to you. And in the Buddhist text, it says the world will respond as you see it. There are all these links that let us know that as we own our anxieties as real, as we, if we don't do our work to get past our anxieties, they show up in what we believe to be real fears, which are not, they're delusional fears. But we believe them to be real fears, and then we react to the world and people as if this is so. And guess what happens? It shows up exactly that way. Because there are ways in which we self-prophesize these things in action, in word, in deed, in body language, in eye contact, in facial expressions. We give the cues that let people know that we aren't safe in terms of how we want to be treated, but we don't feel safe in that getting that treatment can actually occur. And this happens all the time with people I see in terms of those who come to therapy. And in fact, there's a self-fulfilling anxiety that goes on in therapy that most patients come in with, and it's something I deal with right away, which is people come in worrying that they are going to find out and anxious, therefore, and therefore they own it as fear. They are fearful that they are going to be the absolute poor and bad and unwanted and undesirable child that they were raised to believe in certain aspects of their upbringing. Now, not all aspects. Nothing is all or nothing. So there are ways we do like ourselves, but in the ways that we don't, the ways that cause us to not succeed in the world are the things that show up. And it's what causes people to be frightened of therapy and therapists. Most people want to put down therapy and therapists is just ridiculous. But the reality is that most people don't want to come in and do their work, which is exactly what needs to be done. You know, we go to physicians and dentists and so forth regularly to get preventative checkups to make sure we're okay. But we won't go to therapists to do preventative work to make sure we're emotionally okay and that we're on top of our inner self. And we won't do that. And unfortunately, what happens then is that we are not in touch with ourselves and these self-fulfilling anxieties step up and occur in ways that always amaze us. I mean, how many of you who are listening have had certain things happen in your life that after 10, 20, 30 years, you were sure you had gotten past? You were sure this couldn't happen again? You were sure you would not behave this way again and or pick the kind of person again that's in your life? And all of a sudden, there it is. And the reality is it's because those self-fulfilling unconscious prophecies coming from our anxiety sonar the negative, not the positive. And so it makes it really difficult, and it makes it impossible, therefore, to get what we want. So a la The Secrets and What the Bleep and various types of laws of intention and so forth, guess what happens if our unconscious doesn't believe we're worthy and we keep intentioning something from our conscious? Nothing. The answer is nothing happens, or very little. And we need to come from that more pure and true place that is underneath the anxieties in our own truth of what is and not get caught up in what is not. So this is Heart and Soul. Today, it's Heart and Soul is with myself, Dr. Gary Richmond. Dr. Bill Little is under the weather today. We're going to take a commercial break, and then we'll be right back to talk more about anxieties and how to deal with them.
Life is meant to be lived enthusiastically and with joy. At Pacific Coast Church, this concept is made real through classes, workshops, and services on the creative power within each of us. Our teaching is a blend of new thought and ancient wisdom tradition of spirituality. Individuals learn universal principles, cosmic laws, meditation, and prayer that have been practiced by spiritual seekers for thousands of years. If you desire to enhance your relationships, improve finances, increase health, or explore a new level of self-expression, we invite you to visit our intentional community at Pacific Coast Church. Our address is 522 Central Avenue, Pacific Grove. Sunday services with the Children's Church are at 10 a.m., and Wednesday evening healing services are at 6 p.m., followed by Tibetan chanting and meditation. For more information or a schedule of classes and activities, call 372-1942 or visit our website at pacificcoastchurchpg.org.
Tired of hitting the same roadblocks over and over again? Are you ready to get out of your own way and live a joyful and empowered life? The Essence Within, a unique self-help book written by Dr. Gary Richman, goes beyond short-lived quick-fix solutions to penetrate the myth that reading alone will change your life. In simple language, this book articulates why you are plagued by the repetitive problems in your life and how to go about the work of obtaining real solutions. If you desire real change, The Essence Within offers an easily followed path to your true self and success in all areas of your life. To find out more about Dr. Gary Richman and his services, The Essence Within, or to purchase his CDs on relationships and empowered living, visit his website at drgaryrichman.com. That's drgaryrichman.com. The Essence Within is available online at amazon.com and in many local bookshops. Truly feeling good and realizing goals and desires comes from inside out and not outside in. The Essence Within is about getting out of your own way and moving more into that feeling good place of your heart and soul.
The Mind Shop Metaphysical Book and Gift Store offers an extensive and unique collection of spiritual, esoteric, and self-help books by authors such as Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, and Louise Hay. An impressive array of gift items is also available as our CDs of the Heart and Soul radio show. Open 7 days a week, our knowledgeable and helpful staff is happy to recommend new books or reacquaint you with an old classic. For personalized service in a warm, inviting atmosphere, visit the Mind Shop at 522 Central Avenue, Pacific Grove. For questions or Mind Shop hours, please call 372-2971.
And welcome back to Heart and Soul. I'm Dr. Gary Richman. My co-host, Dr. Bill Little, is under the weather today. We wish him well and hope to see him here next week. Heart and Soul is a show in which, again, we talk about walking your own walk in the world with integrity and depth and centeredness. We do it from a number of perspectives. It is also a live call-in show. And as I'm here alone today talking about the topic today is anxiety and how that manifests in our sense of fear that's not true or real. Love you to have me have you give me a call, and the number here at KNRY is 831 area code 373-1234. That's area code 831 373-1234. I know many of you understand and have experienced the issue of anxiety because it's just a human phenomena. So if there's ways in which you'd like to have some feedback on that, trust me, you're not the only one thinking about that type of question. And when I expound on it, it will answer it for a number of people, as well as give me ways to go more in depth in a way that identifies with aspects of what you want to know about anxiety and how to attend to it, because it is a major phenomena. It is an ongoing phenomena. And the more we get a handle on it and go to a deeper sense of self beyond the anxieties as we squelch it or heal it, we live a life from more empowerment, a more centered sense of self, and a truer sense of enjoying life. So one of the things also that we like to do here on Heart and Soul is read from the Tao Te Ching. It's the Tao is one of the things that Dr. Bill and I both follow and feel very close to in terms of our own ideologies. So I wanted to read something on fear with regard to that. And verse 46 says, "There is no greater illusion than fear, no greater wrong than preparing to defend yourself, no greater misfortune than having an enemy. Whoever can see through all fear will always be safe." I think that's phenomenal. I have something else I'm going to read, but here again, the Tao talks about the illusion of fear. And in essence, from what I'm talking about, it's the illusion of anxieties. That again, the definition of fear, as I said at the beginning of the show, fear is sitting in front of a lion concerned it's going to eat you. Well, that's very obvious and very understandable. Most people have anxieties that manifest in terms of a la sitting in a room by yourself, having anxiety that a lion's going to eat you. It's not real. And here the Tao is talking about that there is no greater wrong in preparing to defend yourself. So as I was saying earlier, that you start to get a self-prophesizing aspect of anxiety and then prepare yourself and defend yourself from something that's not even there yet. Hence, on the basis of intentioning and the laws of attraction, guess what you attract? You attract something to be frightened of. And therefore, whoever can see through all fear will always be safe. Because when you get through and beyond anxieties that aren't truly there, then what you get to be is sitting in a sense of safety and personal empowerment and bliss because you know there's no enemy really there. How profound is that? So verse number 13 also talks about aspects of fear, and it says, "What does it mean that hope is as hollow as fear? Hope and fear are both phantoms that arise from thinking of the self. When we don't see the self as self, what do we have to fear? See the world as yourself. Have faith in the way things are. Love the world as yourself. Then you can care for all things." And what that says to me in that verse is that, again, as I said, anxiety is something that's a post-traumatic stress from something you learned in your own childhood and is repeating itself. When you start to step out of that self and get out of, in essence, the ego, which is always dealing with insecurity and a sense of something going wrong and something outside of oneself. When one starts to center within, then one can have more of a sense of faith and love in the world because you're walking from a fearless place, an anxiety-less place of knowing that you're okay. And if something does come up, you'll handle it. But again, as Roosevelt said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. We're always on the lookout for fear that comes from our own self-prophesizing anxieties. There are very few times we have literal fear in our face. And so those moments, yes, we have to step up and on a flight basis attend to it. But they're so minimal. Anxieties are what we have to attend to and handle in a way that will eradicate them. So what are some of the ways to do that? Well, my own personal perspective as a transpersonal psychologist, and what that means is that I deal with traditional psychotherapy and ways in which that unconscious and that inner child need to be attended to. But I also bring in the spiritual place that attends to understanding that, as one of Bill's analogy, that as human beings, we are souls having a human experience. And so he likens that to two birds sitting in a tree. One bird goes down to the ground and is picking at food and dealing with other birds and all the anxieties and competitiveness and so forth. But there's another bird that's part of ourself that sits in the tree and watches. And the more we step out of those anxieties, the more we step into our own truth and our own witness that isn't a part of the anxieties and the craziness. So what I like to do is go after it at a deep, profound level, and I believe that psychotherapy is one of the ways to do that. Certainly, another way to see where some of those things come up is to couple psychotherapy, because I don't believe in a one-prong approach, but a kind of eclectic approach, is to do meditations and understand what it is that we look like as we step into a world much more deep and inside ourselves that goes beyond anxieties to a centered place. And to experience within our own meditation how we are and get almost a kinesthetic sense and a sense memory of who we are beyond our anxieties, which is a centered, empowered place that is expansive, that expands into the universe and is one with that universe. Because when we step into anxieties, one of the things that I work with in terms of my patients specifically is that we constrict. What happens when you get scared and anxious? Well, you constrict, you withdraw, you hibernate, you close up, you walk away from people. You attempt to stay away from stimuli that you're self-prophesizing is going to happen. So again, often I say to patients I work with that fear and faith cannot stand together. That when you're in fear, and most of that, again, is anxiety, because there are no real fears right in our face. We don't have lions attacking us every day. We have anxieties attacking us every day or causing us to feel overwhelmed. And so the more we can attend to that, we can get out of our way and we can step beyond that to an empowered center place. And when we're meditating, it allows us to understand that depth of self and what that looks like. So that's, again, another way of dealing with it. One of the ways that probably cognitively you can attend to it is just hear what I'm saying and really own it. Really own that every time you start to get anxious, to find some perspective that says, wait a minute, this is what Gary was talking about. I'm having anxiety about something happening that hasn't even happened yet. And look around your environment. It's probably a beautiful day. The sun is out. The birds are flying. Or maybe you're sitting and just looking around your room, or maybe you're even filling out bills, but you're paying them. And all of a sudden you're getting anxious about maybe you won't be able to pay them in the future, but it's not in the moment. And we need to look at what is in the moment and remind us. Now, one of the ways that various therapists and certain seminars and that people take that help people to focus on their own process is journal writing. If you write in a journal and process the repetitive ways that things come up in your life, as time goes on and you reread your journal, you get to see the pattern that keeps occurring. You get to see the places you keep sabotaging. You get to see the triggers that cause those anxieties and those self-fulfilling prophecies of life and the way you get yourself into trouble to occur. For instance, let's talk about another anxiety. In the 80s, there was a huge trend of losing weight on something called fast diets or OptiFast. And these were, people were given various formulas to drink in certain liquid form to attend to handling obesity. And you know what? It worked. But you know why it didn't work over the long run? Because they weren't attending enough to the anxieties underneath sometimes why people are obese. And again, as I said, one of the ways that people self-medicate and anesthetize and have addictions around is food. As people used to say in those programs around the counseling aspect, is it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating you. So if you have an underlying fear, and many women had this specifically, I was working with some women on OptiFast and having to do counseling around the fact that as they lost the weight and as they started to feel better about themselves and as they started to look more attractive, they started getting attentions that reminded them of inappropriate attentions that they'd been given when they were much, much younger, even in childhood. Some had been molested, others had just been given extremely inappropriate attention that caused them to have fears. And those were real fears of someone attacking them, or energetically overstepping boundaries and attacking them, or intruding on them energetically in ways that were inappropriate. We feel those energies all the time. That's not something you just feel as children. But unfortunately, it lodged in the unconscious as a sense of fear and a sense, therefore, of anxiety. And so as many women started to lose a great deal of weight, what happened was they sabotaged the Optifast and started eating again because the anxieties of being given attention and being given flirtations and such that would cause them to realize that men were interested in them all of a sudden. It doesn't matter if they were married or not, just the attention alone was upsetting. And all of a sudden, the anxieties that they had not attended to and not been worked through showed up in that post-traumatic, self-fulfilling, prophesied way. And the anxieties were too extreme, and they caused themselves to sabotage the fast. Again, another way in which these things occur. So as you journal write, one of the things you get to see is where you start sabotaging. What causes you to sabotage weight loss? What causes you to sabotage sobriety? What causes you to sabotage relationships? What causes you to sabotage the way you work? What causes you to sabotage the way you show up? And as you watch that, you get to have insights. Now again, on an unconscious basis, the way to go after that is at an unconscious level. It's a very hard thing to do on our own because we have defenses that keep us from that. So again, just to own my own perspective and my own bias, psychotherapy of having someone help you walk into that place and lean on that person as you walk into that dangerous place so you can rummage around there, find what's going on, heal it, not feel overwhelmed, and work through it is extremely appropriate and where I believe substantive change really occurs. That is the place to really attend to what's going on and heal it. Because again, it's not the old Western philosophy term of get over it. Getting over it is suppression. Getting over it is denial. Getting over it is acting like you're fine and it's okay. And the reality is, you're not. It's just fooling yourself and rationalizing behavior that you don't really want to go after in a hard work kind of way. And again, all of this is work. When I work, as I just said, with patients, I don't call it play. I tell them we're here to work. This is tough stuff. We're going after deeper issues. And deeper issues take discipline. And as one of the women of my church said, and I love this saying, if she's listening, I want to reinforce her for it. She said, if you don't have discipline, how can you be a disciple? I'm going to use that a lot and quote her on it because it's a wonderful term. We need discipline to be a disciple to change, to be a disciple of change, to be a disciple who walks a more spiritual-centered, psychologically healthy path. This is what's important. If you have any sense of wanting to do your work, of being a spiritual person, of being someone of depth, of being someone who just believes they're not like most of the superficial people walking around, the work and the focus is internal. It's going after that internal sense of self. Well, that takes work because it also scares the heck out of us. We have to go after the demons. We have to go after the shadows. And we're sure at an unconscious level those shadows are valid to be there, that we somehow deserve them or are deserving of the criticism that created the shadows. And so we have to go after those things because if we don't, as I said through this whole show, the phantoms of anxiety will take us out. They will cause us to act out in a way or believe in a way or pursue life in a way that is not our path, that is not healthy. It is our path in the sense that we're here to learn lessons, and those shadows keep showing up to say, hey, are you looking at me? Are you seeing what we're not doing well? Are you seeing how life is not working? Are you seeing how disappointed you are? Are you seeing how dramatic your life is because of how upset you are that it's not working? That's the hint. That's the lesson. That's something we need to really get a perspective of. And the more we get a sense of those hints, of those lessons, of those stimuli that say, take a look, we start to step back into that witness place I was talking about. That witness does not have anxiety. The witness does not have insecurity. The witness does not have a sense that things aren't going to work out. The witness does not have a sense of not being abundant. The witness is like the Shakespearean quote that says, all the world's a stage and we're players on it. The players are is like the bird on the ground interacting and doing the show to learn the lessons. But the witness is in the audience watching the play to see what it's supposed to learn from the theme and plot of the play and the way the protagonists play out what's going on in the dialogue. And that's what we need to do with our anxieties. Our anxieties are man-made. We learned them. We did not come into this world with those anxieties that we walk around the world with. Children walk into the world in terms of being birthed from a place of trust and love and wanting to be held and wanting to be nurtured. And again, these are I'm talking about children who are healthy and normal without certain difficulties or cognitive or physiological difficulties that cause them to not feel that way. But normal children, most of us walk into the world wanting to be safe, protected, allowed to cherish, allowed to grow, allowed to thrive, to be encouraged, to be empowered, and to be given a path that pursues our own sense of purpose. And we all have a sense of purpose. And the way we get involved in not pursuing our purpose is because we allow the anxieties and the wounds of our childhood to manifest in a way that is not going to allow us to thrive, flourish, or be cherished. And the more you can be aware of that, the better it is. The more you can attend to that, the better it is. So let me interrupt myself for a second and let people know that as you're listening to this, and if it's ringing true, you may have questions about more in-depth aspects of the ways in which I've been talking about these things. If you do, the number here at KNRY is 831-373-1234. This is Heart and Soul, and I am open to taking questions at area code 831-373-1234. So I've pretty much gone over the whole gambit of anxieties and what that's about. The issue is, what are you going to do about it? A lot of people want to listen to things, but they don't want to take action. Do you know why you don't want to take action? The reason you don't want to take action is because of the anxieties. You have a sense of fearing the work. You have a sense of what's going to happen if I step into that work. Who am I going to find? What about me am I not going to like? What's going to show up that maybe is hopeless or helpless to change? What's going to show up that is going to just unglue me or cause me to lose my anchor or lose my sense of balance that I won't be able to regain? Well, I want you to hear that's normal. It is normal to have anxieties about that, but it doesn't mean that it can't be worked on. Because anything that we start to turn inward toward, that we take the time to truly walk back into ourselves and have a sense of what a purpose to heal ourselves, will be healed, because in the self-fulfilling prophecy way, we do want to heal and we can heal. So my understanding is that someone has taken wonderful pity on me and given a call. So welcome to the show. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
So my question is, can you work through your through those deeper anxieties that you talk about without going to therapy, or do we all have to go to therapy in order to work through those?
Well, that's a very good question, and I appreciate your calling in. Well, the deal is that therapy, again, is my bias. I believe that just like guides, when you first go river rafting or you first go hiking and backpacking into difficult territory, even in the old days of the westward movement when wagon trains were going from Independence, Missouri out to Oregon or California, you don't know the way to go. Now, it doesn't mean you can't get there on your own, but if you go with a guide, even people who have professional coaches or even in terms of physical exercise, when you have someone who's a trainer, we hire people to help us go through those early stages of what it is we need to know and how we need to do it so we don't hurt ourselves, and we get there in an easier, relatively healthy way in terms of people who understand the path. Even mentoring, whether it's in business or in religion, we want people to mentor us. So my own bias is, and as those of you who are up-and-coming colleagues of mine are learning, that this is a path that I think needs someone to guide you. And therapists, competent professional therapists, I believe are one of the definite and best ways to go to really healing these anxieties, because the anxieties aren't tangible.
Thanks.
Oh, you bet. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay. So that was a good question, because a lot of people, as I said, in our society, even though many people are in therapy, most people won't go to therapy. And the reason is, again, anxieties, which show up as fears that aren't real but are concerning. I had a guy walk into my office one time, and he sat down, and the first thing out of his mouth was he said, "I'm really worried I'm going to find out I'm the awful person that I grew up believing I was." And the reality was that wasn't the case. What I say to people who come to work with me is, I know your anxieties are such that you fear you are this awful person. And what happens if you find that out? What are you going to do? The reality is there's just a little child in there who was wounded. And I know a lot of people are real tired of the psychobabbly word of the inner child. But the reality is we started out as children and we move up to adults. And the experiences we have as children stay with us forever. It isn't coincidence that Hitler and the Catholic Church both said, "Give me your children till they're 6 or 8. I'll have them forever." They understood the impact. And most of you who have raised children know this to be a fact. Children take things in like sponges. They take information in just like that. And the information they take in at a core level of themselves and the way they're treated is how they believe about themselves, which creates anxieties of not being acceptable in various ways. And those things are important. So I believe, of course, therapy is the way to go with that. But as I said, it's an eclectic approach. I don't believe that one way is the only way. I don't believe that only meditation will work. I don't believe that only psychotherapy will work. I don't believe that only journaling will work. I don't believe that only if you believe in past life issues will work. You want to approach it from a number of different levels, because what we know is that we're very complex beings and that various things will impact us in various ways. And so I believe that people should do it from a number of ways. But psychotherapy clearly is one of the ways I advocate. And again, I'll own the bias as a psychologist that that's what I believe. But I've also found it to be true. The people I work with do find their anxieties mitigating and do find themselves able to move ahead. And the reason I tell most of the patients, in fact, if not all the patients I work with, pretty sure I tell all of them, that they're very courageous to have just come in across the threshold and sit down, because they have conquered a certain anxiety that has gone on just from that. To come in and say, "Okay, I have anxieties about being here, but I don't want to do the things I've been doing anymore. I don't want to keep manifesting the things I've been manifesting anymore. I don't want the intentioning I keep putting out not to go anywhere. I don't want the ways in which I want to interact in the world to be sabotaged or hit a dead end or a roadblock. I want to do more." And it is an interesting walk and a courageous walk, because you're constantly dealing with working on your shadow and the adventure and the joy and the satisfaction of feeling like you're making some progress and being proactive, coupled and conflictual with the anxieties of, "Oh my God, how scary this is," because you're heading into your shadows and that's always scary. And we're afraid that the anxieties we have, which we believe are fears that are real, are truly just that. As I keep saying, that they're real and they're not. They are delusions from a post-traumatic stress place of repetitive patterns that are not part of really who we are, but of what we've learned. And what I tell people that psychotherapy is mostly about is unlearning these things. It's not about being so different. People say, "Well, who am I going to be when I finish this?" And I keep saying, more. So there's that music that lets me know that we have completed another show and are out of time here at Heart and Soul. So get a handle on those anxieties and walk more empowered and straighter and more confident. Take care, and we'll be here next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for being with us today. Join us next Friday at 3:05 for more of Heart and Soul on Historic News Talk, AM 1240 KNRY.
It's Radio of the People from People's Radio Incorporated at AM 1240. KNRY, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz.